Good afternoon. My name is Chris, and I'll be your conference operator today. At this time, I'd like to welcome everyone to the Posera Second Quarter Results Conference Call. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise. After the speaker's remarks, there will be a question-and-answer session. If you'd like to ask a question during this time, simply press star then one on your telephone keypad. To withdraw your question, press the pound key. Thank you. Loudon Owen, Chief Executive Officer, may begin your conference.
Thank you, operator, and thank you everybody for joining our Q2 2016 conference call today. My name is Loudon Owen. I'm the CEO of Posera, and here with me is Kevin Mills, who's the CFO. As we have done previously, there are going to be a few parts to the call. Kevin is going to read the Riot Act. Then he's going to review the financial results for the second quarter of Q2 2016. I'm going to talk about the industry, where the company is headed to, and then we're going to take questions. Before I turn it over to Kevin, just a few very quick comments. Posera is still working through its restructuring, but we're making some very significant progress, some of which are reflected in the financial statements, some of which are not yet reflected. And there were some excellent advances during the quarter. People build companies, of course, and pleased to have announced that after June 30th, subsequent to June 30th, we hired Dan Poirier as our Chief Operating Officer. And I think that'll have a very significant impact in the coming quarters. As well, we hired a new head of HR, Stacy Marshall, who's extremely capable. So instead of walking through the information you already have, I've asked Kevin to focus in on a couple of highlights and explain on just a few issues, four or five things. One is the change in the accounting for Zumeron, which is sort of a neutral matter. The increase in our margins during this past quarter, which is positive. The recurring revenue analysis, which is positive relative to the equivalent quarter last year. Restructuring costs, which are pretty neutral, and then talk about our normalized EBITDA. And it's effectively neutral in that it's improved year over year, but it's still not where we want to get it to. So I'm going to pass it over to Kevin.
Thank you, Loudon. As usual, I'm going to take a couple minutes to read the ground rules, particularly as it applies to forward-looking information. This discussion, or this conference call today, could include certain forward-looking statements that are based upon current expectations, which involve risks and uncertainties associated with our business and the environment in which the business operates. Any statements contained herein that are not statements of historical fact may deem to be forward-looking, including those identified by the expressions anticipate, believe, plan, estimate, expect, intend, and similar expressions to the extent they relate to the company or its management. The forward-looking statements are not historical facts, but reflect Posera's current expectations regarding future results or events. These forward-looking statements are subject to a number of risks and uncertainties that could cause actual results or events to differ materially from the current expectations, including the matters discussed under risks and uncertainties in the annual information form, which was filed by the company on March 30th, 2016, with the regulatory authorities. Posera assumes no obligation to update the forward-looking statements or to update the reasons why actual results could differ from those reflected in the forward-looking statements unless required by law. Well, now that that is out of the way, we can progress with the call. So I'm assuming that you've already had a chance to review the company's recently published financial results. I will quickly confirm the presentation changes that were implemented as a result of the Zumeron disposal. For the first quarter of 2016, the financial statements, due to the timing of when the company made the decision to dispose of Zumeron, the Zumeron entity met the definition of a discontinued operation IFRS 5. Therefore, the income statement for Q1 and the period of Q2 where Zumeron was still owned, the consolidated results did not include the revenue and expenses for Zoomeron in the net income from continuing operations. The Zoomeron results are only included as a net one-line item titled Profit Loss from Discontinued Operations Net of Tax. Additionally, the impact of the discontinued operations was represented for all comparative periods of 2015 on the company's consolidated financial statements and management discussion and analysis. The discontinued operations accounting treatment is non-standard for the company, so I hope that the explanation was relatively straightforward. But to be clear, the financial results displayed for the 3 and 6 months ended 2016 and the comparative periods in 2015 do not include Zoomeron's revenues and expenses above the net income and loss from continuing operations line item. Now that the presentation of discontinued operation has been explained, I will discuss the Zoomeron transaction and then review the represented quarterly financial results for Pacera. On April 29, 2016, the company completed the sale of our subsidiary, Zoomeron Inc., back to its management team. Pacera received total cash consideration of $4.5 million in the sale. Consideration received comprised of a cash payment of $2 million on closing. Additionally, on closing, Pacera received a repayment of an existing intercompany debt in the amount of $1.3 million. And further, the buyers have assumed a secured note payable of $1.2 million, $0.4 million of which is unconditionally due before December 31st, and $0.8 million of which is repayable at an amount that is dependent on variables such as Pacera's current share price. The company recorded a gain on the sale of the Zoomeron transaction in Q2 of $1.96 million. For Pacera, Q2 and Q4 tend to be the seasonally stronger quarters during the year, whereas Q1 and Q3 tend to be seasonally weaker quarters. Total revenue was $4.33 million for Q2 2016, which was 1.1% ahead of Q2 2015 and 1.8% behind Q1 2016. All of the comparable quarters were relatively consistent, though I do want to highlight that in Q1 2016, the company generated approximately $660,000 of revenue from its first phase of a hardware refresh program with one of its largest customers, where in Q2 2016, the company only had approximately $30,000 in refresh-related revenue. The margins earned on the refresh program are lower than traditional sales, which was evidenced as the gross profit for Q2 2016 was 32.7%, which was 14.5% higher than the 32.9% gross profit in Q1 2016. Although the refresh was undertaken at a lower historical margin for hardware sales, the net present value of securing support and maintenance contracts for an extended term more than compensates for the lower hardware margin received up front. The refresh program also reduces the cost to service our customers, as the newer equipment is less likely to have service issues closer to deployment, and over the long run, fewer service calls will drive increased customer satisfaction. We are currently planning out and mapping out a second wave of a refresh program during the latter half of fiscal 2016. Recurring revenue is a key non-GAAP financial metric measured by the company, which includes certain components of POS revenues, such as supports and maintenance contracts, referral revenue sharing agreements, and other recurring revenue agreements. As a reminder, the recurring revenue figures presented during the 3 and 6 months ended financial statements and MD&A do not include any recurring revenues generated by Zoomeron due to the discontinued operations accounting treatment previously discussed. With that said, recurring revenue was approximately $1.74 million in Q2 2016, an increase of 11.9% from Q2 2015, and a 0.1% decrease from Q1 2016. As you can see from the chart presented in the MD&A, recurring revenue continues to grow in aggregate and as a percent of total revenue. At this point, recurring revenue is essentially nil to be received to date from the rollout of the Secure Tableplay platform, as it has not technically been completed, and the sell-through for this product is expected to commence for the first signed processor in latter Q4 to Q1 2017. With the sale of Zumeron, Passera will continue to grow its POS revenues and is free to negotiate with payment processors to undertake the most advantageous partnership in order to grow its payment-related revenues moving forward. During Q2 2016, the company incurred further restructuring costs. Restructuring expenditures are one-time expenditures that have been incurred by the company and are related to severance of employees, legal costs associated primarily with severance, and an operational consulting firm which is assisting in the reorganization of the company. During Q2 2016, the balance of the restructuring expenditures incurred were in relation to operational consultants assisting to improve the operational discipline and efficiency for the company. During Q1 2016, the company incurred approximately $500,000 in severance-related expenditures. The individuals who were terminated had their positions filled primarily from the existing Passera team, and the savings will benefit Passera prospectively. Restructuring expenses are a first step to reduce costs and improve the operational discipline for Passera, which will eventually lead to an improvement in the financial performance of the company. Finally, I was going to discuss the normalized EBITDA loss for Q2 2016, which was $38,000, a decrease in the loss of by $87,000 from Q2 2015. The differential between the normalized EBITDA loss in the comparative periods was relatively muted, but the balance of the change is a result of the benefits received from the terminations completed during the first quarter of 2016. As you can imagine, negative normalized EBITDA is an area of concern for the company, and we are addressing it by way of both attempting to increase our sales levels as we expect to be impacted from the future deployment of Secure Tableplay and from further cost control and reductions. With that, I'm going to turn the call back over to Loudon.
Thanks, Kevin. So let me step back a little bit and just tell you on a more macro basis a little bit about where we're headed to. I think by now people know that we have a simplified, streamlined definition of what we do. We're in the mission-critical software business for hospitality organizations. And we have been continuing to streamline the organization very effectively, but there's more work to be done. That's why, as I mentioned at the outset, particularly happy to have Dan Poirier join. He's got a tremendous background. He's worked literally from the ground up. He's a technologist in his original studies, subsequently did an MBA, but everything from knocking on doors and sales to doing global operations of a very successful company, and I have known him from that company. So a lot of confidence in him and what he's going to bring to the team. And he's already met, I think by now, 80% of the staff. He's traveled across the country into Seattle and is making great strides. From the financial perspective, as Kevin identified, it was pretty similar, Q2, top-line results to previous Q2. And also to Q1, but the bottom line is improving. Some of the headcounts and reductions, some of the operational efficiencies are flowing through. We are going to be doing a refresh program in the fourth quarter, and we think it has significant potential. I think there are a couple of major trends that are happening in the industry. And from a delivery perspective, mobile and kiosk are two of them. And in the U.S., EMV is certainly one of them. So we're slowly getting to the point of being able to say, how do we move the needle, as opposed to simply incrementally improving from quarter to quarter. It's obviously important, but we're looking at how we can move the needle in the organization. There are a couple ways of doing that. With our existing products, we can clearly expand our customer base, and we have some good strategies to do that and are starting to make some good strides. We're bidding on some fairly large contracts right now. We can start to expand into some of the newer segments that we've had success in, and in particular with Maitre d' into the hotel industry. We've had some very good recent success. And the other thing we can do, of course, is to ramp up on the trend in the U.S. for EMV chip and PIN, chip and choose compliance. I spent 5 days down in Dallas at a show, it's a retail solutions show called RSPA recently, and it was very interesting because it became clear that EMV is a source of a lot of uncertainty, but it's certainly an imperative. And when I got back, it really did strike me that it was still way behind what we do, certainly in Canada and in other countries. It struck me even more strongly when my credit card was ripped off and $35,000 was charged to it because of the swipe payment systems. Obviously, I don't know who took it, but literally as I was reporting the fraud on the phone, more charges were coming through. So the issues about liability shifting are very real. They're not insignificant. And the issues about chargebacks are just enormous. And what struck me at the trade show was the large payment processors are getting a great deal of pressure at every level. And it's, I think, going to become something where it's just a competitive reality. They simply have to be able to offer it. So, again, to refresh your memory, we have announced one transaction with a very large payment processor. We haven't announced a name because they've asked us not to until all the certifications are done, and they're proceeding very well. We are very confident that we will be announcing soon the signing of further what we refer to as secure table pay contracts with large U.S. payment processors. And the other thing I will say is that we're not simply going to stop at that point with our existing product. We do have our TMC payment laboratory, and TMC is kept very separate from the balance of the company. And we already have a second generation of product, which is being moved forward. And we think that we're not quite sure what the life cycle is going to be of the first product. It could be 3 years, it could be five, depends. People don't always move that quickly in the industry, but we are already working on the second generation product. So I think from a macro perspective, the functional integration of the company is largely complete. A lot of the improvements in terms of infrastructure are either done or well on their way. We are honing in on the product line management to ensure that our two kind of strains of products, whether it's fingerprints or Maitre d', are being enhanced and are geared up for the future. Things such as a front-end tablet, for example. And I think we're at a point where we are going to be in a position, I can't promise it, but I hope we're going to be in a position to have a business plan for discussion and release within about 30 days. And at that point, we're going to be able to tell shareholders what we're actually looking to achieve going forward. So I think we've kind of turned a corner operationally. Still a great deal of work to be done, obviously, and nothing taken for granted. but we are going to be advising shareholders as to what we're doing and how we're positioning and why. And I think that's going to be very helpful in understanding what we've actually been doing and what the work has been put towards over the past months. And I guess the last comment I'm going to make is that the company historically grew through a host of acquisitions, and we now have been doing the consolidating. There are still opportunities in the industry for consolidating, and we still think there's some. It's a very fragmented industry, so while we were reluctant to look, certainly for the first 6 months after I stepped in, we're now starting to at least look. So our eyes are open, and so please be aware that we're happy to entertain potential partnerships or potential acquisitions, because we do think that we've now got at least the foundation of a team that could manage and properly integrate anything we acquired. So we're in the process of doing our own sort of competitive analysis as to who's out there, what they're doing, whether it's a core technology that we think may be particularly useful that we could sell through our channel. We don't need to do acquisitions. We can certainly do it by way of partnerships, but we're sort of in a position to be back open for business in terms of looking at growth opportunities. And those are my comments. Operator, back to you.
Thank you, and at this time, I'll remind everyone, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. And I'll pause for just a moment to compile the Q&A roster. Again, that's star 1 on your telephone keypad if you'd like to ask a question. The first question is from Michael Vanderhayden, a private investor. Your line is open.
Hi, Loudon. Good afternoon.
Hey, Michael.
I had a question. Could you please tell me who a Mr. Puiling Chan is and what his position and role is in the company?
Puiling is an advisor to the company. He has a very long-standing background in technology companies and in particular software companies. He was previously the chief executive officer of SkyWave Mobile. SkyWave was a portfolio company of the venture capital firm that I co-founded. He took that particular company from kind of a million-ish in sales to about $75 million. It was sold for $200 million in cash. And Puiling is a long-standing business colleague and a very trusted advisor. And what happened is he is one of the people that we brought in to fortify the management team. And so he stepped in together with some other people from SkyWave, and Dan Poirier is actually from SkyWave. Dan was effectively in a chief operating officer role there because the company was sold, and post-sale, I think everybody has fulfilled their duties to the buyer, and now they were in a position to do other things. So he's got a very, very long-standing operational depth and expertise, and I could bore you to death with his background. It ranges from starting in the very, very early days with another colleague of ours called Michael Potter with Cognos, but it's many, many years of helping to fix, grow, turn around, and build on the foundation of software companies. So he has agreed to come in, and he certainly doesn't need or want a full-time job, except I must say it's gone from being something or have a quick look here to a lot of very heavy operational duties. He was really retired, but I asked for his help, and that's a very, very good thing that Dan has come in, because he's going to be able to take over a lot of the things that Stanley's been shouldering. Stanley or Puiling, it's the same person.
Okay. Thank you.
Yep, you're welcome.
And again, if you'd like to ask a question, that's star 1 on your telephone keypad. And I'll pause for just another moment. And the next question is from Michael Reed, a private investor. Your line is open.
Well, hi, Loudon. Mike here. I'm just wondering, on the U.S. side, where I think some of the big opportunities are, the certification on the potential buyer that you have, is that a long process? Could it be a couple of weeks or more like 3 months?
The process, there are two certification stages, and they're typically, unfortunately, you can't do them in parallel. And it depends. The one that we've already signed, we're not talking about a couple of weeks still. I think we're probably still talking about another, 4 to 6 weeks, most likely. For any new processors sign up, we're hopefully going to be able to slightly accelerate it, so it won't be as long as the first, but it's typically going to be a probably a 6 to 8 week process as a minimum. So, and it depends what happens, of course, during the certification. I wouldn't say the certification is mechanical, and that wouldn't be fair, but for the most part, it's sort of fairly predictable. And it ends with just a whole series of tests to make sure. Actually, it's funny. It's sort of pretty raw testing. You know, try it with this card and a bent card and a twisted this and a twisted that. But I think it's, you know, the reality for us, if people are trying to assess when revenue is going to be coming in, it's going to take a couple of stages. Stage one is finish the certification. So as I said, let's say it's 2 months, sometimes three. Stage two is to start to quite often do a significant test, but get a test market out there so the individual organizations can get comfortable with it, build up the marketing materials, get the sales force fully informed. A lot of the large payment processors, they have enormous sales forces, but you know, you've got to educate them and then get them in the field. So it's not going to happen overnight. The time to revenue, as you can see, it's going to be probably starting in Q1 next year, but with any luck, it'll start to snowball.
All right, thanks.
Thank you.
There are no further questions at this time. I'll turn the call back to the presenters.
So thanks very much for being on the call, everybody. It's actually a good group of folks today. Well, it's always a good group, but quite a significant group today. We're happy to give this update, and we are very much looking forward to coming out with our plan, telling you what we're actually looking to do over the coming next couple of quarters, in fact, over the coming couple of years. And we will certainly keep people updated, so we would ask that you have your Google filters on, Google alerts, whatever it is, as we believe there will be some things to pay attention to in the near future. Thank you very much.
Ladies and gentlemen, this concludes today's conference call. You may now disconnect.